Reading from Canto 8, Chapter 12, Verse 32. Tasya nu dvavato retas. Jasanda moga retasaha. Susmino yutapasyeva vasitam manudvavataha tasya of him, Lord Shiva, anudvavataha, one who was following Reta, the semen, chaskanda, discharged, amoga reta saha, of that person whose discharge of semen never goes in vain, shushmina, mad, yuktapasya, of a mad elephant, of a male elephant, yeah. Eva, just like, vasitam, to a female elephant, able to conceive pregnancy, anudvavataha, following. Translation, just as a maddened bull elephant follows a female elephant who is able to conceive pregnancy, Lord Shiva followed the beautiful woman and discharged semen, even though his discharge of semen never goes in vain. Verse number 33.
Yata yata patamayam retastayas mahatmanaha tani rupasya. Hemnas cham shatra asam mahipate.
O King, whatsoever on the surface of the globe, O King, wheresoever on the surface of the globe fell the semen of the great personality, Lord Shiva, mines of gold and silver later appeared. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that those who seek gold and silver can worship Lord Shiva from material opulences. Lord Shiva lives under a bale tree and does not even construct a house in which to dwell. But though he is apparently poverty-stricken, his devotees are sometimes opulently endowed with large quantities of silver and gold. Parikshit Maharaj later asks about this, and Sukadev Goswami replies, there's one particular pastime that Prabhupada would tell, wherein Parvati and Lord Shiva are together. And Parvati says to Lord Shiva, you know, Lord Shiva, you're worshipped by so many great personalities, and you're honored everywhere. And all great personalities who are honored, they have some place to live. But we don't have any place to live. It says, he lives under a bale tree. Doesn't even have a house. That's Lord Shiva. So, Shiva thought, all right, maybe my wife has some good suggestion. So they had a house built. Lord Shiva had a house built. And so now he had a house and his wife was happy, Parvati. But when you have a house, you have to have what is called a welcoming ceremony, where you welcome all the great sages, saints, and others to bless the house, to make sure that it becomes auspicious. So Lord Shiva, following the proper etiquette, invited all these personalities to come, and they came, there was a nice celebration, and they bless the house. Then, of course, there is another part to the ceremony wherein you have to give some dakshin to the great sages. So when Lord Shiva was trying to see what he could give, he doesn't have anything. But then he remembered, oh, I have a house. So he gave the house for dakshin, and he was back underneath the bale tree. Prabhupada tells that story. It's Lord Shiva. He doesn't care about anything material. Even a house, he's not interested. So it says here in the previous verse, one whose semen never goes in vain. It's mentioned that one of the births of Lord Hanuman was part of this particular pastime, where the seminum of Lord Shiva was taken and later given to Anjana, because Hanuman is known as Anjana Putra. He's the son of Anjana. She was a fallen demigoddess. She had committed an offense and was forced to leave the higher realms and come to this level. But still, she got the blessing of having, and that's a long story, she got the blessings of having the son like Hanuman. Hanuman takes different births in different times and through different situations. He's also known as Keshari Putra. His father was a prince named Keshari. But he's also known as the son of Shiva too. If you go into certain places in India, you see Panchamukha Hanuman. Hanuman with five heads. There's one such place I believe in Kurukshetra. There's a big 35, well, talk about meters, it's about a 10 meter high statue of Lord Hanuman in Kurukshetra. So Hanuman he's also known as the son of Lord Shiva in one of the incarnations. He comes at different times. But he's also a Chiranjeevan. That means he is eternally existing somewhere. He never dies, Hanuman. Although he appears in different ways at different times. So one time it's from the semen from this particular pastime that was captured and then given to Anjani. And that's a particular bird actually transported it. That's it. Transported it. So Shiva is very powerful. And he's known as Asutosh. He's easily pleased, easily angered. He has many names, Mahadev. Prabhupada always liked to refer to him as Mahadev, the best of all the demigods. And here you see how he's simply acting apparently like an ordinary person being bewildered by a beautiful woman. But the beautiful woman is not just an ordinary beautiful woman, it is Krishna. So Krishna has his Maya Shakti, which is so powerful that he can bewilder anyone. So even Lord Shiva, who was thinking, I'm beyond bewilderment, but we see. And here it says that, just like there's a nice example, when a female elephant she goes in heat and she wants some relationship with the male elephant. When the male elephant sees that, he goes into what is called musk, and he becomes mad. And when he goes mad, sometimes he goes running and he stampedes villages and he destroys everything. Elephant in heat. A male elephant is just dangerous. Sometimes they evacuate the whole village when they see the elephant is coming in this direction. Yeah. There's one story where there was one mad elephant He was just terrorizing everyone. He was mad all the time. And there was one great personality living at the time. His name was... what's his name? Oh, God. I'm bad with names. He was the disciple of Shamananda, Pandit. His name was... can't think of his name. Very powerful preacher. In fact, he made the whole province of Utkala, which is now known as Jagannath Puri area. What's his name? Can't think. It's falling, kind of coming close. And he was so powerful that when the elephant was coming, he decided to confront the elephant. So the elephant was running madly through villages. And so he stood in one place, and the elephant was coming, charging at him with full force. And he was just standing there. And then when the elephant came, he just raised his hand. The elephant stopped. And then he went like this, and the elephant paid his obeisances. And the elephant became calm and peaceful in his association. And then he instructed the elephant, why are you causing harm and so much destruction? You know, you should give up this activity and become a nice devotee. And so the elephant did, and he gave him the name Rasikananda, because that's what his name was, Rasikananda. And then he gave him the name Gopal, gave him the name Elephant Gopal. So the elephant became a devotee. There's a cold breeze coming in from somewhere here. Oh, this thing is on again here. You can shut it off. Yeah. Oh, you can. Yeah. On. You don't know how to shut it off. Huh? All right. Okay. This is called shutting it off without shutting it off. Yeah. I guess this is Slovenia. Everyone likes the cold here. Summertime, nobody's around. Yeah. Wintertime, it's crowded. So, me and someone, Dutch, we have a little rasa going about cold weather. She loves cold weather, and I'm like this, you know. So, yes, yeah, so even this garland is too cold. She puts this garland on, it'll probably just turn into fire or something. Okay. What are you going to do with that?
One more.
Oh, on that side. Okay. Yeah. Keep building it. Maybe we can just we can direct the whole temple here. Okay. Still cold, but anyway. The only one that knows how to do it is Ananta, and he doesn't tell anybody how to shut it off. You hear that, Ananta? Okay. Okay, Lord Shiva. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. He's the greatest of all Vaishnavas because he undergoes such austerity in order to preach Krishna consciousness that he'll go to any situation to save the conditioned souls. He's so kind to the conditioned souls that it doesn't matter who they are, he'll give them shelter. Even the lowest of the lowest, ghosts, hobgoblins, jinns, and various types of demoniac persons, approach Lord Shiva. We're getting better here.
Okay.
Okay. Doesn't work, does it?
Okay.
So when we speak about Lord Shiva, he is so merciful and so kind. But here we see him in a different situation. Thank you. I have to go shopping. I'll be right back. I need some more clothes here. No, there's nothing in there. Okay. Okay, thank you, Mother Sri Devi. I have so many mothers. It's nice. Okay. Hare Krishna. So here, and then we go in this particular verse with the purport here. He's so renounced, Lord Shiva. There's a nice section in the end of the 10th canto where it explains that the devotees of Lord Krishna, they have nothing, but Krishna has everything. Krishna's Dwarkadish, he has opulences and power. Palaces and so many queens, and Krishna is like he's a prince, he's a king, and he's in Dwarka, but his devotees, they're considered to be poverty stricken. But Lord Shiva, he's poverty stricken, but all his followers are wealthy. People worship Lord Shiva for wealth. I've met many Shiva Bhaktas, and many of them are well-to-do. they worship Lord Shiva, and he gives them, or he arranges for them to get a great amount of wealth. Even says here, that here it says, those who seek gold and silver can worship Lord Shiva for material opulences. Wow. So he provides even the most precious of all metals, gold, silver, other things like lapis lazuli and rubies, sapphires, so many. So that's Lord Shiva. But he is very renounced. But he's always preaching to the conditioned souls and giving them a chance to come to Krishna consciousness. And there's a whole series of verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fourth canto, where Lord Shiva is just constantly glorifying Lord Vishnu. And Shiva is so great, sometimes he is seen as the Supreme Lord himself. There are many Puranas, especially the Shiva Purana, the Linga Purana, or the Bhavishya, maybe even Bhavishya Purana, which actually give statements that one should worship Shiva as the Supreme Lord. Sometimes devotees come in contact with Shiva Bhaktas, and they try to instruct them. Shiva plays three roles. He is the best of all devotees. He's a demigod. And he's also worshipped as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by a large amount of his followers. So he's in three different positions. That's why to understand Lord Shiva is very difficult. In fact, Shiva Tattva is very, very difficult to sort out. Because in one role, he's the best of all bhaktas. In another, he's a powerful deva who's controlling the mode of ignorance. And in another role, he's actually accepting worship as the Supreme Lord. Why does he accept worship as the Supreme Lord? Because just to get those followers that don't worship Krishna or can't worship Krishna or do not want to worship Krishna, he takes them and allows them to worship him. And then what happens, once they worship him, because he is the greatest of all devotees and demigods, they make advancement, and that prepares them or gives them certain qualities where they can start to worship Lord Krishna. I have met many Shiva Bhaktas who later became Krishna Bhaktas. One of them is now known as Chandramali Swami. Huh? You also Shiva Bhakta. Any other Shiva Bhaktas here? I mean, you go through it, you'll find it, yeah. So when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I had one of these buttons you pin on, and it was a button of Lord Shiva. I would keep it on my bee bag for the first 5 years I was a devotee. Prabhupada gave me the name Lord Shiva, because Chandramali actually means Lord Shiva. So I got lucky. So, yeah, Lord Shiva is really, and he's very, he's super merciful and very, very powerful too. Extremely powerful. But devotees pray to Shiva, or we don't worship Shiva as the Supreme, but we can pray to Shiva for his mercy so he can give us Krishna bhakti. That's the whole thing. And this is also true for other great souls, that we approach other great souls, because in order to approach Krishna, it's quite difficult. In fact, it's practically impossible. You have to be very pure. But if you get some recognition by other great souls who are fixed in Krishna worship, then that mercy can bring you closer to Krishna. So we want that. Devotees are always seeking the blessings and mercy of great souls in order to progress on the path of devotional service. That is our success in Krishna consciousness here. And Lord Shiva is one such personality. And he has so many amazing, amazing pastimes. Most of the times he's giving out benedictions. Sometimes he gives out benedictions to devotees. But many times he gives out benedictions to demons. Because even demons, we see even Hiranyakashipu worship Lord Brahma. And Shiva and Ravana worship Lord Shiva. And Vikrasura worship Lord Shiva. And there are so many personalities that worship Lord Shiva. And if you go, now Shiva is only worshipped in his form as Shiva, I think in only one or two places in all of India that I know of, he's worshipped in his linga form. He was cursed not to be worshipped in his personal form. Do you know that story? How he got cursed? Brahma got cursed at the same time. It's a pastime where Lord Brahma was performing a yajna at a place called Pushkar in India. Pushkar is a very interesting place. And Brahma was performing a yajna. And he was waiting for his consort Saraswati to come, because he needed his consort in order to complete the yajna, and she wasn't coming. She just wasn't coming. I guess she was getting decorated up. You know how ladies, when they get decorated up, takes forever. Sometimes it does. So she was getting decorated up to come to the yajna, but it was taking too long. So the priests who are doing the yajna, they said, Lord Brahma, the yajna will not be successful if it's not begun according to the titi or the time. So you must begin now, otherwise it will be unsuccessful. So, what to do? He had to have a consort. So there was one lady there, her name was Gayatri. She was goddess Gayatri. So Gayatri was there, so he took her as his substitute consort for the yajna, just for the yajna. And the yajna began. And then about partway through the yajna, Saraswati comes. And she is not happy. She's like fire. And she starts cursing everybody. Brahma. I don't know what she called him, but she called him some other names too. She said, Brahma, I curse you that you will only be worshipped in this place and nowhere else. So if you go to India, you see that Lord Brahma is only worshipped in Pushkar. There's a temple there of Brahma. Nowhere else. Lord Shiva, you were here. And you didn't do anything to stop it, so you should be cursed also. So I curse you that you will be only worshipped in your linga form. So that's what happened to Shiva. And Vishnu, he was also there. She said, Vishnu, you will not be seen publicly, you'll only be found in the hearts of the devotees. And then she cursed Gayatri too. Yeah. And this is a very important thing, because we know that Gayatri mantra, you can't speak it out loud. You have to chant it softly. Or not even softly, you have to chant it silently. Gayatri is always chanted silently. So she said to Mother Gayatri, your glories will never be sung loudly. So since then we chant Gayatri. What we say, inaudibly, like that. So that's how Shiva got cursed. Mm-hmm. Saraswati is powerful, goddess of learning. And she's also an expansion of the Mahalakshmi, who is the goddess of fortune. Mm-hmm. So this is Lord Shiva's situation. And it says here, of course, he doesn't even want to live in a very nice, opulent place. He's not interested in living. He lives in the jungle under a bale tree. He has a place just between the material and spiritual worlds. There's three realms of existence. There's one is called Devidam, the other one is called Maheshdam, and the other one's called Haridam. Haridam is the spiritual world. Maheshdam is the abode of Shiva, and Devidam is this material realm. So three dhams. So between the spiritual and material world, there is the abode of Lord Shiva. Now, if you travel outside of the universes, because the universes are covered with each of the layer of the material elements, and as you go to the highest point and you come to the material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Each one of these elements is 10 times thicker than the previous one. So what covers this material energy is these 8 elements, strong covering. You can't get out, even if you try. You have to get through these 8 elements. And each one is 10 times thicker than the previous one. But if one who goes beyond that, where do they come? They come into this realm of darkness, complete darkness. And you travel in there for billions and billions of miles in this realm of darkness until finally you come to this area of light. And in that area of light there is Mahakailash, the planet of Lord Shiva. So he lives on that planet with Parvati, his consort. And if that area of light is getting light from the Brahma Jyoti, which is coming from the spiritual world, down into that realm, which is Kailash. So that's the light is coming from the spiritual world, like that. So that is the abode of Lord Shiva. And then that's that light, if you go into that light, and then you finally come to the Vaikuntha realms, and then going through the Vaikuntha realms, you come to the topmost planet in the Vaikuntha realm is Ayodhya Dham, the abode of Lord Ramchandra. And then if you go beyond that, you come into the area of Goloka Dham, into the area of Krishna's abode in the spiritual world. This is a very, it's interesting and very helpful to know how the everything is structured. It's a beautiful, beautiful structure of how everything is laid out so nicely. But here we are, and then, of course, there's seven planetary systems. And the Earth is the lowest of the seventh. We are called Bhurloka. Om, Bhur, Bhuva. There's Bhur and Bhuva. Bhurloka is the planet of the ghostly spirits. That's a little bit higher than the Earth. So around the Earth, there are planets of ghostly spirits. That's why you see so many ghosts come to this planet sometimes. Some of them are benevolent, and some of them are malevolent. So benevolent and malevolent ghosts circle around the Earth, and there's planets there, and there's planets of the Rakshasas, and below the Earth there are lower planets and then higher planets. Then if you go way below the Earth, then you start going into the whole planetary systems of the lower. And then you meet various types of beings that are of the are ghostly nature, demons and others like that. But they have great opulences on these planets. So Krishna's creation is so great, so complex, and so impossible to understand. It's just so real. And even the material world, nobody can understand it, how it's structured, how... There's thousands and thousands and millions of universes. Koti means millions. Millions of universes. And this universe that we live in, the one we live in here, is the smallest of all the universes. This is a small universe. I'm considered to be the smallest. That's why Brahma only has four heads. He has only four heads. But if you go to other universes, Brahma has more and more heads. And then there's one particular story where the four-headed Brahman wanted to come to see Krishna in Dwarka. So Krishna was there in his palace in Dwarka, and Brahma came, and he came to the door. And then the doorkeeper, maintaining Krishna's palace in Dwarka, came to the door and saw the four-headed Brahman. And Brahma said, I would like to meet Lord Krishna. I have some business. So the doorkeeper went back, told Lord Krishna that this four-headed Brahman, Brahma is here. And then Krishna said, which Brahma? Which Brahma? And so the doorkeeper came back and said, Lord Krishna wants to know which Brahma are you? Because there's many Brahmas. And Brahma was shocked. He was thinking, which Brahma? I'm Brahma. And then he was thinking, why is Krishna asking which Brahma? And then all of a sudden, he saw, which appeared everywhere, Krishna arranged it, that all of the Brahmanas from all of the different universes who have like 10 heads, 20 heads, 50 heads, 1,000 heads, millions of heads, they all appeared. According to the size of the universe, Brahma has a particular amount of heads. because he's got to watch everything. And he's a jiva. So when he's Lord Brahma, the forehead of Brahma, saw all these other brahmanas, and they all came with their helmets on, and they all simultaneously offered their obeisances to Lord Krishna. The noise, the sound of them all making their obeisances with their helmets touching the ground was so tumultuous that it shook the whole universe. And then Brahma got the understanding, I'm just an insignificant Brahma, because he was thinking, well, I'm Lord Brahma, you know. But compared to the other Brahmas, he was really small. So this is an example. Even Brahma is considered to be insignificant. What to speak of us? It's like in the material world, a conditioned soul will think, I'm so great. I've got money. I got position. I got opulences. And he thinks, I'm good. I'm great. Prabhupada tells one story. There was one devotee who was living in the temple in Los Angeles, California. And so Prabhupada could understand he was feeling. So Prabhupada started to tell a little story. Prabhupada said, this material world is only one quarter of the entire existence. Three quarters make up the spiritual world. So this is one quarter, three quarters in size is the spiritual world. And in this one quarter, which is the material realm, there are so many universes. And in each universe, there's so many living entities. And in each of the universes, there are so many planets. And so therefore, there are so many living entities on so many planets in these universes. And then, this particular universe that we live in is the smallest of all universes, and there are millions and uncountable living entities. And then Prabhupada goes on to say, and on this one universe, there's one planet, it's called Earth. And there's so many planets in this universe, and Earth is one of the planets, and there's so many living entities on the Earth. And then Prabhupada went on to say, and on this earth there are so many countries. And each one of the countries, there are so many living entities. And now we are here in one of the countries called the United States of America, and there are so many living entities. And in the United States of America, there is one city called Los Angeles. Although in the United States of America, there are so many cities. And each of the cities has so many living entities. And out of all of those cities, there's one city called Los Angeles, California. And in the Los Angeles, California, there's so many living entities living there. And in Los Angeles, California, there are so many streets. And here we are in one of the streets called Watsika Boulevard. And there's so many people living in the street of Watsika Boulevard. And there's so many houses in the street of Watsika Boulevard where so many living entities are living. And there's one house on Watsika Boulevard known as the Hare Krishna Temple. And there are so many living entities in the Hare Krishna Temple. And then there is one living entity in the Hare Krishna Temple who thinks he's great. So Prabhupada did that to this one devotee. I won't mention his name. You probably know who I'm talking about. Just to give him a little indication, you're not so great. There are unlimited, uncountable living entities. So that's the false ego of the living entity. He thinks, I'm great. But Chivir Surupai Krishna Aranichadas. The living entities are just, we're called jiva. Jiva means tiny. Tiny means very small. So what is the size of the living entity? You can't even see it. You can see your body and you can measure it. But what can you measure the soul? The soul is 1/10,000 the tip of a hair. So if you take a hair and you cut the top into 100 pieces, and you take one of those 100 pieces and you cut that into 100 pieces, that's the size of the soul. That's how big you are. We're really small. In fact, you're so small they can't even see you. In other words, you can't see the soul because it's so small. Yeah. It's not possible to even be seen. So this is a little bit of the indication of the greatness of Krishna's. So therefore, the most important quality that makes the devotee successful in Krishna consciousness is humility, realizing how small I am. I am nothing. And Krishna is everything, and everybody else is greater than me. If one thinks like that, then one can chant Hare Krishna. If one thinks he's very advanced, or thinks he's better than others, thinks she's better than others, then it becomes difficult to chant. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the lecture. I'm interested about these courses. I didn't catch it. Who was that person who cursed Brahma, Shiva, Gayatri?
That was Brahma's wife, Saraswati.
Saraswati, okay. Mm-hmm. So, if Shiva is so powerful, why did he accept all of them?
He could have overturned the curse because of his power, but he didn't. He respected the curse.
Okay, he respected
it. That's true also. A lot of times a person gets cursed and they respect the curse. There's an example in the Shastras. I'm trying to think what the example that. Huh? Parikshit Maharaj, exactly. Parikshit Maharaj, he could have overturned the curse of that Brahmin boy who cursed him to die in 7 days. But he didn't. He accepted it. And therefore he took the opportunity to, you know, go back home, back to Godhead.
Mm-hmm. So that was his choice, actually.
Yeah. Okay. And Prabhupada says that. He was very powerful. And he could have just, you know, nullified the curse, but he didn't. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you see that a curse is given just to respect the curse or to give credence to the person who gives the curse. A curse is accepted like that. That happens. There's another example of that too, I think. Yeah. Sometimes devotees get cursed too. That happens. Huh? Narada Muni, he got cursed by Daksha. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And he accepted the curse. He was cursed that he couldn't stay in one place more than 3 days. And he kept traveling, so that's what he does now. Just keeps traveling. Prabhupada said, "I've been cursed by the parents of my disciples, and therefore I want to stay in one place and do Srimad Bhagavatam and finish it. But I can't because I've been cursed by the the parents of my disciples. So I'm asking my sannyas students to take up the curse and let them travel for me so I can stay in one place. Prabhupada said that about us. Yeah. And so the devotees wanted to please Prabhupada, so the sannyasis accepted that. So curses, yeah, curses are very interesting. Sometimes you can modify them, sometimes you can nullify them, which is really hard to nullify them, depending on who they come from. But sometimes they're accepted because someone sees that there's some benefit in the curse. A lot of times when a person gets cursed, they get benefited. Usually curses are meant to benefit the person and not simply a way to try to punish them. It may look like a punishment, but usually persons who have that power do it in order to bring that person to a higher stage of life, Krishna consciousness. So Shiva is worshipped in his linga form everywhere.
Then his curses will last forever.
I guess, because I don't think Shiva's going to counteract the curse at this point. But he has the power to do it if he wants to. But there is a place, I've been there, there's a few places actually. There's a place in Maharashtra. Maharashtra is the biggest province in India. So Astra means place. And Maha means, Maharashtra means the biggest province. And there's a place called Satara, which is a beautiful compound. It's mostly Mayavadi compound. But I used to go there. And I would chant japa there. And there was a Shiva temple inside of the compound. And in that temple there is a deity of Shiva. He's dancing. Shiva in the dancing pose. So I would go and take darshan from Lord Shiva. And I've also gave classes at that temple. The priest asked me to give classes, so on Shivaratri one day I spoke the glories of Lord Shiva. But a beautiful deity of Shiva, and there's at least a couple other places where you find deities of Shiva that are installed in certain temples, but I'm not sure where else. Kashi. Kashi is the place of Lord Shiva. Benares, Varanasi, we call it now. The old name was known as Varanasi. That was the old name. Then it became Benares. Now it's Kashi, right? So he's called Kashi. Was he called Kashi?
Kashi Raj.
Kashi?
Kashi Raj. Raj means king.
Kashi Raj, yeah. Yeah, she was called Kashi Raj. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Question?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. I was thinking about the very last... First, thank you, Guru Maharaj, for this really interesting class. In the end, we talked about how really we should be humble, and that humility is actually what a devotee should be, humble. So I have a question about real humility versus low self-esteem. When we are feeling poorly, I'm useless, I'm stupid, I'm crazy, I'm this and that. How do we know that it's real humility or just low self-esteem?
If you're thinking crazy, low, and like that, that's not humility. That's just a deranged mind. That's all it is. Humility means to understand your position, that's all.
Hmm.
That you are small. So, and Krishna is great. Humility means not to want to be honored by others. That's a characteristic. If you want honor from others, or you expect honor from others, then that's contrary. So, one who is humble doesn't want to be honored by others. That's a quality of humility. And there's others. Humility will give respect and service to others and not wanting respect and service for oneself. That's also a quality of humility. Mm-hmm. Now, low self-esteem is just, it's a material thing. It has nothing to do with spiritual life. Low self-esteem means I tried to be the best and I failed, therefore I give up. That's low self-esteem. It's just pride turned inside out. That's all it is. If I can't be the best, then I just feel good being low. It's the soul is part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, the soul is actually wonderful. But you have to know your position. The soul is, you know, tiny, jiva. So, if you say, I can't do anything, or I can't do this, that means you don't understand the proper connection. Because with the mercy of Krishna, one can do great things. Without the mercy of Krishna, one can't do anything. So therefore, one who's humbled looks for the mercy of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada, I mean, he opened, you know, hundreds of temples and wrote so many books, traveled around the world, was glorified by great personalities. Still, he remained humble because he understood it's Krishna, it's not me. I'm simply trying to carry out his instructions, and by his mercy, this is I'm becoming successful. Arjuna. He was a powerful warrior, and he defeated so many other powerful warriors. But when Krishna left the planet, he wanted to use Arjuna as an example. And so Arjuna couldn't do anything. He had his bow. When he was talking to Yudhisthira, he was lamenting. And Yudhisthira is asking him, why are you lamenting? And he goes through so many reasons. But he said, I have my bow, I have my powerful arms, I have my arrows. But they're all useless because Krishna's gone. So when he tried to protect the queens who were traveling, they got captured by some cowherd men. And Arjuna was there to try to defend the queens, but he couldn't. The cowherd men defeated him. So that pastime is to illustrate his power. Krishna did that just to show that his power is my power. It's not his power. I mean, if Krishna wants, he can just take everything away and you can't even remember who you are, where you are, why you are, how you are, and you can't do nothing. You can't even do anything if Krishna wants. He can take everything away. He can make you so stupid you can't even talk. I guess that's good for a few people. benefit the rest of the world. You know, so Krishna's all powerful. Rake Krishna Mare Ke, Mori Krishna Rake Ke. If he wants to kill you, you can't, nothing can save you, no matter how powerful you are. And if he wants to save you, nobody can harm you. That's Krishna. So when one remembers that everything is the mercy of the Lord coming through the cyclic succession, then one is in the proper consciousness. What can I do? Any other questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, question about humility. Humility. Is it okay to be humiliated to become more humble?
Can you repeat that again?
Okay. Is it okay to be humiliated to become more humble?
If it works, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Whatever makes you humble, it's good. But usually when you're humiliated, you always react in the other way and you try to fight back. But if you accept it, then yeah, that helps you. But it doesn't always work like that, but it can. It's up to you. Krishna's put me in this embarrassing situation and to just to purify me, make me more humble. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.